ASEA New Horizons, where law enforcement practitioners and academics get together to share knowledge and ideas to shape the future of crime analysis.
Well, thank you for having me here, Paige. My name is David Toddington, and I am the CEO of a company called Toddington International. And we have been doing investigative support training, intelligence support training for about 24 years now. My background is really a mix of both private and public sector. I guess the long story short, I joined the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as an auxiliary constable way back in 1989. And my day job was working in information and communications technology. Just before the dot-com bubble burst way back in the 1990s, I wound up working within the police world. I was appointed a supernumerary constable under the RCMP Act, and I worked in areas of national security, undercover operations, serious organized crime. And what I saw during that time was this real need for training around information technology as it related to police work. Now, keeping in mind at the time, there was not even any tech crime units around. And really, that was the start of something pretty special in doing what we do today. We do training all over the world. We've worked with many, many different types of government agencies, from policing, compliance, all the way through to military as well, and pretty much everything in between. Even interestingly enough, getting into the areas of environmental enforcement, when we look at things like animal trafficking and the ties to serious organized crime, transnational organized crime, and even terrorist finance, when it comes to animal poaching and animal trafficking, human trafficking as well is an issue that is near and dear to our heart. And then private sector. And a lot of this relates to the financial services industries around anti-money laundering, know your customer, enhanced due diligence, and even things like chemical security as well. So applying those same enhanced due diligence principles to anti-money laundering within the chemical industry, so that especially in developing economies, numerous chemical companies can at least do their part to ensure that they're not selling chemicals to, shall we say, possible clients who may not be who they say they are, who could then promptly turn these chemicals into weapons or into illicit drugs as well. So it's important work that we do. We're extremely passionate about educating. It's an interesting thing that I notice in the marketplace. There are many that are practitioners, but maybe not the greatest teachers, really experienced people, no question. We have practitioners, a wide variety of people within our organization, and also we are extremely passionate about teaching and changing the way people think as well. That's what really drives us.
Yeah, so interesting. So we now know why you started your company and the reasons behind it. You just touched on something there, thinking. So thinking about thinking, that concept that we see sometimes within the intelligence literature. What do you think about that, David? Thinking about thinking.
Well, it's an interesting process, really. And I mean, I am as guilty as anyone of really following checklists in the past, of developing processes that worked. We were quite lucky with many of them. And then sticking with that, because really, if it's not broken, don't fix it. You achieve a certain amount of success given certain processes. It works all quite well. And really, you kind of fall into the comfort of that. For me, there was something that radically shifted. This would be coming on for 6 years ago now. And a rather unusual request that wound up coming from Shine TV in the UK, an invitation to do the television program Hunted. Now, Hunted is was a remarkable experience. I did three seasons of Hunted and two of the celebrity editions of it. And I'll tell you right now, I'm not an actor. I just simply do my job. And a remarkably talented group of people were brought together to participate in this program from military backgrounds, technical backgrounds, the intelligence community, and police backgrounds as well. And there's many stories about how this all sort of came together and how we wound up working together, these very different cultures all working together under these almost sometimes chaotic circumstances at times. But here's my takeaway with all of that. While on one hand, our job was to produce a television program, we were a part of that process. The job of the producers was to produce a compelling television program. I looked at it a little bit differently. And what I looked at it as was a remarkable simulation, a simulation that I think would be pretty much impossible without significant resources to be able to replicate in the training environment in the real world. I mean, keep in mind, there is somewhere in the range of 150 people in the background making it all happen. We've got these fugitives that it was casting did a great job of selecting people based on experience and diversity and different backgrounds, bringing all of that together. And you've got these fugitives out there running around with the camera crew with them. Their every move is being recorded. All of their moves go into what we would nickname television command, which was run by a former chief superintendent with the Metropolitan Police, who is effectively the referee. And then with that, if we didn't ask the right questions, and if we didn't do the detective work, sort of simulating a real world environment, and there are limits on how realistic all of this is, but nonetheless, it's pretty good. If we didn't ask the right questions, if we didn't do the right detective work, we wouldn't get the right answers. We were given really no leeway whatsoever. There were no, as we would say, gimmies that were ever issued to us. Now, with all of this, we would get information back. We would then start to piece together what we believed was the circumstances, and we would direct our resources to see if we can actually apprehend or tag these people. It's like a giant game of hide and seek, really. Now, among all of this, sometimes we catch people, sometimes we don't, but we actually... certainly in season one, I certainly found that it was possible to start sometimes believing our own hype when we were successful, sort of internally. Now, there's a lot more to the program than you ever see in the edited version, but here was my epiphany. When the program went to air, I'm now seeing the daily lives of the people that we're pursuing. That is very unusual from any of the police work I have ever done, where maybe we catch a fugitive, maybe we don't. And let's keep in mind also, there's these remarkable pressures on us, a clock counting down, you're microphoned all the time. And anytime you say something even semi-intelligent, a camera swings around into your face and you realize there's potentially millions of people watching and you find yourself second guessing everything. Now, with all of this, watching the episodes as they aired, and we're not allowed to have any contact with the people that we've been pursuing until after the program has finished airing. And sometimes I'll say it does get personal. I realized how wrong we often were, how absolutely wrong we sometimes were, and yet we believed that we were right. Now, this may or may not translate in the program itself, but 12 hours a day for, you know, 24 to 28 day period with, you know, hardly any time off. It is an exhausting process. And there's a lot that goes on in the background. And I became really intrigued by this. We were often wrong and we thought that we were right. So what was happening there? Well, what it all came down to was I realized we needed, and what I needed to do in the work that I was doing, is put far more emphasis on behavioral science. Do a far better job of profiling the individuals. Now, in this case, in terms of the television program, the people that we were pursuing, but let's apply this to the real world as well. Looking at things like what I would loosely classify as actor observer asymmetry, asking yourself the question, well, what would I do if I was them? Well, these are people who may think completely differently than I do. Their background, their culture is completely different than mine. So how can I predict what they're going to do based on what I would do under the circumstances? And not only that, there's a lot more that I don't know than do know about their circumstances at that exact point in time. So looking at behavioral science from the perspective of doing a better job of profiling the people that we are looking at, investigating, pursuing perhaps, and also turning that around and being more aware of our processes, of our critical thinking processes, of our own biases, and how these biases will impact how we perceive information, the conclusions that we end up drawing, and then the actions that we end up taking. And since that time, it's been quite a journey. I'm fond of saying the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. It's a constant process of learning now and applying all of this. And very much in terms of my process around online open source intelligence, whereas, you know, it was very technically driven previously, I was really focused on the technology and to a certain degree on process as well. Now, I think that over 50% of what I'm doing is thinking about my thinking while I'm thinking it, applying both proactive and reactive critical thinking skills, deconstructing questions, being very aware of logical thinking and creative thinking processes, being aware of how biases come into play, language and the language that I now use and everyone I work with uses. The way that we use language when communicating with each other is really important. Being aware of things like anchoring effect, for example, and how this can impact the team dynamic and the team environment. So it's a very, very interesting thing. And I think it's something that I'm deeply passionate about. And in fact, say that in the training programs we do, if we just focus on tools, techniques, sources, and methods, then really what's going to come down to is, you know, those skills are going to be outdated very quickly because technology moves along at a remarkable pace. This being said, if what we're doing is training people how to think, they are going to be able to adapt as technology changes. And no one circumstance, no one task that anyone is investigating is ever going to be the same. So again, it really comes down to training people how to think about each circumstance. Checklists are the very enemy of innovation and non-linear thinking, lateral thinking when it comes to conducting an investigation.
Well, I'm so happy you mentioned Hunted. I am so happy you mentioned that TV program because it's so interesting. I remember you were talking to me about it when I first had a conversation about the podcast with you. And I was like, oh, I'd love to pick your brains on that. And I'm so thankful that you've just told everyone about it because it's so interesting. Do you think that our police forces and our law enforcement agencies don't do enough regarding thinking and how that process works? And also what we're missing out on good work because of it.
Well, police agencies around the world that we work with are under tremendous pressure. There's no question about that. Budget cutbacks, staff shortages. It is a very demanding and difficult job, more so than ever now. And especially when we look at various social pressures, here we are in the middle of a global pandemic and remarkable politicization of events, a high degree of volatility. And again, dwindling resources. It is a tough job, probably in some ways tougher than it has ever been before. Now, when you're working against such odds, it is really difficult sometimes to then be innovative and adopt new methodologies. Keep in mind as well that the police environment is one that is it's very bureaucratic. We also are dealing with a very rigid structure to a certain degree, and for good reason in many cases. So to try to start being a disruptor and start thinking about new ways of doing things, sometimes that is a difficult proposition. Indeed, there are some extraordinarily good people that I have had the pleasure and continue to have the pleasure of working with in that environment. And I think it really all comes down to and going back to Sir Robert Peel's principles of what a police force should actually be, as opposed to a paramilitary organization, which I think that some agencies have kind of gone even more so in that direction. So to answer your question, on top of, again, this very difficult circumstances under which people are doing their work, you're dealing with a bureaucratic infrastructure. You're dealing with laws that can't keep up with technology. The law of disruption, we look at Moore's Law, computer processing power increasing by 100% every 18 months while the price remains constant. And then the very slow change, that blunt instrument that is legislation. Policing is probably more difficult now than it has ever been. But I do see hope, and I actually see this. There are people that are applying very different ways of thinking, very innovative ways of thinking, while still working within policy and legislation as well. It's a significant challenge. And let's face it, thinking is hard work, which is why a lot of people don't do it. And working within government service, success is sometimes not rewarded in the way that it should be, sometimes rewarded only with mediocrity, and yet mistakes are punished severely. So you can't blame people in that service for deciding that the best way forward is the safest way forward and not to take any risks whatsoever. So it's a challenging environment. But again, there are some very good people, very dedicated to what they are doing to community service, making society a safer place, that are taking up that challenge.
Yeah. And you've worked around the world, haven't you? You haven't just been in the UK and where you are now. You've worked in with loads of different forces.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see in different parts of the world how, say, policing operations are conducted. Different legal systems is one of the things. I often say it's often the same stuff with a different accent as far as people's complaints go. And I think it's certainly true to a significant degree. But significant challenges in how different agencies in different parts of the world are dealing with it. So it's there are problems that are quite common, frustrations and difficulties that are quite common no matter where you are in the world working in that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk more about your company then, because this is very interesting and what you're providing. Let's talk about in more detail about the training you provide. So what you've done in the past, maybe what you're doing now, where you want to, how you want our forces and agencies to look like in terms of thinking and removing biases, etc.
Sure. Yeah. Well, what we do is we offer a variety of different training programs. You know, the frustration as an educator is that often we can't work in the way that we would like to devote the amount of time that we would like to devote to a training program, simply because of cost issues and time issues. If you're going to take 24 students and take them away and out of the workplace for a couple of weeks, that's a long time when, you know, they are understaffed and there's a lot going on. That's a big ask. So very often our courses get shrunk down quite a bit. Hybrid training since COVID, we've been able to pivot very effectively. In fact, we're busier now than we have ever been before in terms of live training. And with that, a whole host of e-learning programs that we offer as well. And those have absolutely taken off. So some interesting things around that, the ability to do hybrid training, the ability to bring in multiple instructors on a single training course, which was cost prohibitive when live training was the norm. There's some really interesting things happening in that space right now that are really quite exciting. One of the things I go back to, again, is the incorporation of behavioral science, of critical thinking skills into the training. And I often say on many police training courses when we start them, I'm here to change how you think. What my hope is, in the interest of police agencies becoming more effective, the personnel becoming more effective, and of greater benefit to the communities which are served by these agencies, is that that different way of thinking is going to transcend the job of doing online investigations and open source intelligence, and in fact will be incorporated into all of the other work that these personnel are tasked with. And that's a hugely gratifying thing when you actually see that happening. Our approach around that is very much using adult learning principles, a problem-based approach, experiential learning, learning by doing and then reflecting on that. Personally, as an educator, the things that I'm passionate about in life, I have learned more about those things by teaching it than I ever have as a student. It really pushes you into a whole new space. And when you have to articulate and go through a process and make sure that people understand it. It forces you to understand it on a level you never have before. So I feel very privileged in that I'm constantly learning. And if I can impart some of that, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love the work you're doing. It's needed, you know, it's necessary to help intelligence, you know, agencies and also those that work within them, analysts and SIOs and other roles. Where do you see your company in 5 years' time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I see us continuing to do what we do. We're developing a lot of new training programs right now, which is all very exciting, particularly around critical thinking. And really putting that in the context of what investigators can understand, making it practical. And it's interesting how in my looking at this and getting quite passionate about this, it's led me into philosophy, even Socratic thought, you know, also behavioral economics. Now, that's an awful lot for an investigator who is limited on time and needs to learn in the most effective way possible the skills that they need to do their job better. So what we constantly do is we bring all of this back and we frame it in a way that it is compelling to the people that we speak to, that it makes sense to the people that we speak to, and that it's usable skills, that this is actually going to make people more effective as well. So I just feel extraordinarily lucky that I get to do this because I absolutely love it on so many levels. It's a real passion. So we're going to continue to build that out. We're attracting some remarkable talent right now, which I'm just thrilled about. Again, I think the transition that the pandemic has really nurtured and caused is a remarkable one. And I think it's just exciting as to where everything is going right now. So we'll see what happens. I think key is that we can't really predict what's ever going to happen in the future, but we try and pave out what we do to the best of our abilities, seeing what we can into the future. And well, I'm maybe unusual in the world of business, but I just absolutely believe in following my passion and, you know, really pursuing things that I care deeply about. And somehow the business side may just work out.
Yeah, no, that's not unusual. That's a great, you know, outlook on life. So if our listeners are listening now and they're thinking, right, I'm really interested in this. I want to know more about this company. I want to get involved. They might have to ask permission from their bosses. How does that process work? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, probably the easiest thing to do is just go look us up on the World Wide Web at Toddington.com, and you can find out about the training programs we offer, the support services we offer as well, whether it's live training, whether it is e-learning or bespoke training. So all the information is there, and certainly we welcome anyone reaching out to us and contacting us with any queries that they may have.
Perfect. David, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed speaking with you about this. Very interesting. Love what you're doing. I'm so happy that you mentioned that TV program. I don't think you understand how excited I am about that. I might email you again regarding this because, and I think other people might as well, because it's so big here in the UK. But thank you so much for coming on, and please, you know, stay in touch, and we would love to know how you're getting on and with the things you're doing in your training programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paige. It's a pleasure.
And now let's get to this episode's science snippets for analysis with me, Suzanne Knaber-Nicole from Police Science Doctor. Crime linkage. Geographical and temporal information results in statistical predictions of linkage that are more accurate than some other factors which may be more impacted by outside influences. The choice of where and when to offend is always the offender's, and therefore perhaps one of the most reliable factors in linkage. You'll find the link to the original article in this episode's show notes.
We have a new announcement. As of the fourth Thursday of every month, ASIO are going to be publishing new content, and this will be focusing on crime analysis within Uganda, but also Africa as a whole. My colleague and friend, Emmanuel James Oteng, will be hosting these podcasts, and further information about these will be discussed next by Emmanuel. So keep your eye out for the new Crime Analysis Between the Tropics podcast.
Formerly an intelligence analyst in the UK and now working and training others in Africa, I've joined with ACIA and LEAP to present our Africa series of podcasts. We aim to bridge understanding between Africa and the rest of the analytical world. With shared thought and a common lexicon, we aim to broaden the analysts' worldviews, mitigate cognitive bias, refine analytical tradecraft, and improve investigative outcomes everywhere. This is Emmanuel James Teng, and I invite you to visit leappodcast.com on the fourth Thursday of the month, starting from 12th November, and listen to my podcast there. Analysis improves through exchange.